Are you cyber confident? Do you know what your digital footprint is? Do you understand the reasons you're a cyber target? In this podcast series, you'll learn what it means to be cyber confident both at work and at home. Because when it comes to cyber security, the front line is you. I'm Josella Waldron, and in this episode, I'm talking to behavioural scientist Libby Mayfield. Libby explains how even the most high-tech cybersecurity can be compromised by the people who use it. Her job is to help organisations understand how and why that happens.
I actually studied psychology and social cognition and trying to understand people's behaviour, why they do the things they do and how we can change it. And then through the work I was doing, I got involved in applying that to cybersecurity. So actually, why do people create vulnerabilities in a system that can be exploited by people, and trying to understand why they occur and how we can reduce them so that the system could be secure both from the cyber side and the physical security and everything altogether, really.
So you're here to talk to us about the people side. So is this really sort of things like human error? What do you mean by the people side?
That's fair. So human error tends to refer to when people make accidental mistakes, and that is a really big part of it. So when people are accidentally leaving documents around that they shouldn't do, whether they forget to lock out their screens, whether they are leaving things open, but it can also be mistakes that they are actively doing. So things like they're promoting things online that they shouldn't do, telling people where they are, you know, having a huge social media presence so everyone knows everything about them and all their personal information that can then be used in their own passwords and to create false identities about them. But it can also be looking at, to be fair, we do look at people who are deliberately trying to attack the system. So you might have an insiders who are inside the organisation, people who are trying to have been employed to weaken the system from inside, or also people who could be self-motivated to undermine the system, steal documents or sabotage it. So there's a real mix of things in there. The thing that I found really interesting is the parts looking at an organization's culture and the way that they work, and the kind of indirect things that can affect the organization's security. So the fact that your staff feel like they can trust each other, or whether they feel they have to be following set documents, or if they feel if they do anything wrong, they're going to be punished for it. All of those things can help shape their security behavior as well. And that can really bleed across into how weak that organisation could be for having a number of these vulnerabilities in place.
So cybersecurity really isn't all about technology.
It's funny, I've worked a lot with engineers who kind of saw me come into the room and went, what are you doing here talking about the people? This is about technology, data, computers and how they connect. And if you don't have that, there's no cyber risk. And I absolutely get it. Everything we do is enabled by the technology that underpins our organisation. But there's a lot of cases that people are using the systems. They are looking after the information and they're working with the technology. And so it's important to understand how what they're bringing to the situation, because actually they can create risks and they can also help protect it. If you don't mind, I can give you a bit of an example. I was working with one company and they had two departments, and one department were very fearful. They would do exactly what they were told to do by their line managers. They were worried about being punished, but that meant they were very dishonest. They wouldn't say about if they'd done things that could breach the system or had done things that they'd put things out online that they shouldn't have done. And there were lots of weaknesses that the company and the administrators weren't aware of. And yet in a different department, they had a really honest culture. So they accepted people could make mistakes and they just asked people to report it so that, you know, if we capture a mistake, we can manage it. And everyone was reporting on what was going on. They had all the breaches recorded, and that meant all the administrators could manage every breach, understand what might have been leaked or not. And it was just a difference in the culture, really, between the two departments. It led to a very different number of weaknesses in the whole system security. And for me, it was really interesting seeing the difference between the two departments and the fact that how people could either really hinder the security or be really positive and make it stronger.
So have we always been this careful educating people about their behaviour, or is it something that's come about more recently?
There was a big change about 10 years ago in terms of how IT administrators were working and how they considered people. So before that, people were always seen as the dumb users, that IT administrators would set policy and they would go, God, I wrote it in paper. Why didn't people just do what I told them? I know best. I've written it down. Just follow the paper. And there was this quite... There wasn't a lot of cooperation between the users and the administrators, and there was a lot of frustrations in there. And I think about 10 years ago, people realised there's a lot of good reasons why people don't follow what's written on paper. There can be reasons why what people have written as important for security aren't actually being followed, because, you know, people in an organisation, they've got lots of other pressures, right? They've got to do their job. They are thinking about when they're going home. They've got to manage their life balance. There's all these other things they're trying to do. Security wasn't just the top thing for them. And equally, just because someone's written into a document, this is how things need to be done, it might not be easy for people to follow. They don't understand the instructions. There was all these things contributing to it. And so about 10 years ago, people realised, we need to actually, how can we be working with the people in our organisation, be aware of what is realistic to ask of them to do, what's not. And you now get what's called a socio-technical approach. So trying to look at people as part of the IT and as a whole, how the whole system can be protected. And to me, that it feels a lot more like we're covering all our bases now when we're looking at security, because you're considering all of the context and how the technology is being operated, which can contribute to how secure it is.
So what's difficult? What are the difficult things about implementing cybersecurity within organisations?
Gosh, there are so many things, I guess, that can go wrong. But let's start at the top. When people are trying to bring in cybersecurity, it depends on how much they've invested in it, how much your senior leaders have really bought into it. A lot of people talk about secure by design, and I think that's really true. But you can also see from people who are managing projects or trying to bring organisational change in, they're worried about the budget, they're worried about the time, and all of those things like securing by design are upfront costs. And that's where people might be reluctant to spend those initially. And if you're asking people to invest in it ahead, which can be quite difficult. So that's a big one. I think as well, as an organisation, technology is something that's evolving within an organisation and how they're using it. And you get different behaviours from people over time. So as we can all appreciate, you know, if you've been using one system for 10 years and you've got different ways of working with it and have learned your own shortcuts, it's really difficult then to bring in a new system for people to change how they're using it, and people might not have been using it as it was originally designed to be used. So how you get people to change and adopt a new system is really difficult, because you're asking people to change what they've been doing for the last, you know, 10 years, which has been working fine up until then. You also get a lot of issues if there are all these sort of indirect causes that can affect how easy it is to implement your IT security. So if you don't have enough people, if you don't have enough trained individuals, you know, just a lack of investment in good IT administrators means it's very difficult to have your systems IT maintained well. So how do you train people up? How do you get them to share knowledge? You know, I've seen some teams where the administrators were moving on, you know, every few months, and there was a real problem of just maintaining awareness of how does the system operate, what standards have been accepted over here, and keeping that going for the new person coming in. So, you know, handing over between staff is really difficult. So something that we need to take into account when we're looking at a broad organisation, you often get in, you know, companies, lots of different physical environments that people are working in. So whether it's a very secure facility, people working at home now, for example, and how you adapt the security for those different environments and maintain standards is another another big challenge. So I guess as a whole for an organization, you've got so many moving parts, so many people, so much IT and so many different environments to take into account and to manage it all. It's just a very big problem for people to handle. Coupled with the changes over time, it's understandable that there are going to be, I think, fluctuations in how secure organizations are. So there'll be times where it's really stable and really secure, and other times with some of these changes coming in, it's going to get a bit rocky, but you might get it even more secure if you get good procedures coming through.
It's interesting, isn't it? There's a lot about human behavior, just simple things about the physical security of the building and things like that come into play, don't they?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I think with people coming back to work now, I think everyone's just got to learn to be a bit patient and give each other time, because, you know, what ID passes have you got? Do you remember all your pins for your passes coming back in? Which devices can you take where and how they've been secured? Have you been keeping them up to date? And I think as well with a lot of places, staff, you know, have moved on, right? From the pandemic, lots of people have changed jobs. There's going to be new faces. And so you lose this kind of, you know, people had a good sense of who their colleagues were, who was in their team, that kind of social trust of who was in the office and who needed access to what. And all that's going to have to be rebuilt now. And that just takes a lot of time, I think, to bring it back in, you know, because from where you're working, people were another way of seeing, actually, is someone using something they're supposed to or not? Or does something feel a bit odd about what's going on over there and the way that team are operating? So there's a lot from the physical side, and we've seen a lot as well from certain attacks. There's often a physical component somewhere where, you know, if someone's been able to get into a building and they can get onto one system and can hop onto something else, but really it was a very small window of physical opportunity that they had to exploit to do it or to set it up for themselves.
You talk about trust. A lot of people worry mm-hmm. about the insider threat, so somebody deliberately attacking the network or stealing information. How serious a problem is that?
Some sectors are really worried about it because they have to protect their information and protect their systems. And you can see this in the financial sector, you can see it in the energy sector, and some parts of government as well. And a lot of people, when they think about insiders, it's funny actually, people tend to think it's the contractors coming in, it's the people that have temporary access. And there's some really interesting work done by the Centre for Critical National Infrastructure that looked at it. And from some case studies, realised that actually it was some of the permanent staff that actually were more likely to become an insider. And their reasons for doing so could be that because they've become disenfranchised with their department that they were working in, or felt that their company had disrespected them. And what it tends to be is that trust breeds trust. So if your company is respectful of staff, are thinking actually a lot about personal welfare, how much people are enjoying the job, how much job satisfaction they've got, and also prepared to have a conversation with staff about the direction the company's going in, you tend to have lower insider threats, I'd say. Whereas in places where you're not open to your employees, you're not giving them bandwidth, and they don't have opportunity to voice any concerns they've got, then actually people can, their motivations can kind of turn against the company. And it's something that as a company, they need to be aware of. And it was interesting, some work we've done with the energy sector, where if you have a more open, honest conversation with people and make them part of the security, you're less likely to be surprised, I suppose, by someone who has malicious intent against the company. And it was really interesting to see that it was about that relationship within the company that means you can be more or less likely to have a threat. There was a really interesting case study of a company that had the director. He was really hated by a lot of his staff. He was really difficult for people to work with. He didn't pay people very well. He didn't respect them. And then he had, unfortunately, documents were leaked about his company finances, and the company really struggled to recover from it. And it was one of those cases that, as a company, and the kind of the character of and his way of working actually led to more people were more likely to turn against him than actually work with him.
Wow, that's absolutely fascinating.
It was one of those kind of ironic, you realise that actually, if you're not a very nice person, treat people a certain way, no, you can't trust the people that are working with you, can you? And it wasn't a surprise. A lot of people, when they sort of said, oh, these documents have been leaked and who was it? There were so many people it could have been, because a lot of people were upset with the way that they'd been treated.
Wow. So you're a scientist. Is social engineering more of an art than a science? What do you think?
I think so. Some people who are really good at social engineering, and I think they do perfect through experience their ways of working and the knack really for being able to influence people and to trick people into giving them what they're after. But I think as companies trying to defend against it, there's always the same sort of principles of what people do that we can be aware of. So social engineering, it's about deception coming in, so someone, you know, using a lie to trick what you're expecting. So it might be that receptionist gets a phone call from someone who says, look, I work as an engineer for this department, I need access on this day, can I come in, get booked in, etc. And that's where, you know, receptionist needs to think about, well, what's the checks? How do I know that person says they are who they claim to be? Are we expecting an engineer to come in on that date? Do I know that there's a problem? And you can see how people can be led down the garden path. And those sort of lies can be applied in lots of different ways. So whether it's a person calling up and they're saying, oh, I'm the CEO, you know, they're using the perceived authority to get someone to do what they want them to do. Or if someone comes in and they're really charming, you know, obviously people that we like, we tend to do more favours for. So they'll use charm against you. Or they might say that, oh, this happens all the time. This is why I need to have this level of access. And so there's a lot of basic principles that I think people can use to be aware of to help protect against it. And I think it's important for everyone. If you just double think, why is someone asking for that? Is there a good reason for it? Should I be giving them that level of trust? Can someone else verify for me that that is normal procedure? Those are all things that people can apply, you know, quite generally to keep ourselves safe.
I see. So we've talked a lot about human behaviours. Is there any more that you've seen that affect the cybersecurity of an organisation?
I think so. We've talked a bit about you can have, you know, whether devices are being connected to networks when they shouldn't be. You can have password management, which I think is everyone's favourite topic at the moment, the number of passwords we have to keep. But it is important for companies to have really sensible password management policies. And it's so easy for passwords to be undermined nowadays and for different accounts to be hacked. We've talked a lot about the physical security. I guess the other thing I'd probably bring up is it is about people's online behaviours as well. A lot of companies and employees are much more switched on to what they're putting out online now and the ramifications of that. You know, everyone's worrying about even their children, what information they're putting out about their children that could be used against them in the future. You know, parents posting proud pictures of children starting at school. You've just revealed which schools they've been going to, which could be a future password for that child. It could also be that, you know, if you're working in a particular sensitive job, it might be that information about your family could be used against you as well. So I think being aware of what's out online and your digital footprint is really important for a lot of people. And whether even if you're talking about your job or if you're just your own personal information as well. I think the other side that we've not talked as much about is how people respond to an attack or something that they think has happened against them. So whether you think you've clicked on the link you weren't supposed to, or whether you have breached at work, how you work with your organization to make sure you've managed it, what it means, and have protected the network, the information, whatever it is. A lot of people, I think, get a bit embarrassed about, we did something I wasn't supposed to, or we've breached and I shouldn't have done. And don't realise that actually a lot of IT administrators are really keen to help people resolve that problem or make sure that they can secure the information and help them stay safe. And I think people need to recognise something that does look dodgy and try and react to it as quick as they can. And that's a really important side for everyone to pay attention to.
Okay, so people are returning to work. Some full-time, some are doing a hybrid of working from home and going into the office. What advice would you give to people now to stay cyber secure at work?
So I think starting off, everyone probably needs a bit of patience. It's going to be really hard for everyone to adjust to the new ways of working. You know, there's been huge staff turnovers and IT administrators have got to probably, during the pandemic, people were making allowances, you know, finding ways to get through it. Whereas actually they're probably going through a period of bringing their standards, increasing them back up to a healthy baseline. And it will take time for those procedures to be followed. And everyone's going to have to be patient with them doing that as much as learning those procedures themselves. Staff will also are going to be learning new habits again. So how do I log on securely from home? Where do I work from in the office? Which parts can I access or shouldn't? And everyone just needs to be a bit open and understanding towards each other as we go through this new adjustment. I think as well, I wouldn't be surprised if companies are going to be asking staff a bit more about what their home security is, particularly in terms of logging on from home, what Wi-Fi you're using, and if you're using a VPN. And I know in some companies have started insisting on their employees using VPNs, and they might be making allowances to help them to do that. And it's going to be quite a change, I think, in the contract between employees and their employers about what is expected of them. And a bit more, it's going to feel a bit invasive initially, you know, being asked about how you're working from home. But actually, this is going to give people more flexibility in the future. And so it's something that together, I guess, people will be, if they can get the right balance of being secure at home as well, then that's going to be good for them because then they can work from there. So be aware of any VPNs, Wi-Fi's you need. And also, I think a lot of companies are pushing out a lot more updates to help secure devices from home. So making sure people are doing their due diligence and keeping their own computers and systems up to date as required is going to be really important.
So, Libby, what's your top tip for both employers and employees to do with cybersecurity in the workplace?
Okay, so for me, the thing that's really important is whether they are doing the security you want or they aren't, it's really important to understand why they're doing what they're doing, because it's very quick and easy for people to say, oh, someone's not following the procedure they're supposed to, and we can make a rash judgment about it without understanding the context and their motivation for doing it. Because actually, in a lot of cases, people are doing something for good reasons. They might be trying to get the job done. There might be other drivers behind it. I think it's important that we understand the reason behind why people are doing or not doing security and cybersecurity properly, and that's going to help people as a conversation help their organisation stay more secure going forward.
That was Libby Mayfield, a behavioural scientist specialising in cybersecurity. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.